advice. Dawn, I've got about 50 problems in my life at the moment, and none of them is how to look after a baby that's 8 months away.
32 weeks, which is closer to 7 months. We should prepare in advance, have an assessment of our suitability as parents, an external audit. Rosie laughed.
Bit late now.
Jean also laughed. I think Don is being characteristically methodical. We can't expect him to take on a new project without research, right, Don?
Correct. It would probably require only a short interview. I'll schedule a date.
I've got no problems with you having a talk to someone, said Rosie. It's great when you're thinking about it, but I can look after myself.
Chapter 13. Our three-person household was settling into a regular schedule. After dinner, Rosie went to her office while Jean and I consumed cocktail ingredients.
What's the deal? Said Jean. You signed up for some sort of assessment.
You were able to deduce that from my conversation?
Oh, only because of my professional knowledge of the subtleties of human discourse. I'm amazed Rosie didn't grill you harder.
I think her mind is occupied with other matters, I said.
I think you're right.
So? I was in a quandary. My EPDS questioning had absolved Rosie of postnatal depression risk, but her answers had revealed the presence of stress. Should I add to it by telling her the full story, or fail to meet Lydia's requirement, which in turn would result in an adverse report to the police, possible arrest and incarceration, and hence even greater stress to Rosie? Jean seemed to offer my only hope. His social skills and manipulative abilities are more sophisticated than mine will ever be. Perhaps he could propose a solution that did not involve telling Rosie or going to jail. I told him the story of the playground incident, reminding him that the sequence of events was initiated by his suggestion. His overall reaction appeared to be one of amusement. I took no consolation from this. In my experience, amusement is often correlated with embarrassment or pain on the part of the person causing it. Jean poured himself the last of the blue Curaçao. Shit, Don. I'm sorry if I've somehow contributed to this, but I can tell you that just turning up with a completed questionnaire isn't going to work. I can't see any way out that doesn't involve telling Rosie or going to jail. I could see that he was unhappy with his conclusion. As a scientist, he regarded an unsolved problem as a personal insult. He emptied his glass. Got anything else? While I visited the call room, Jean must have continued to work on the problem. All right, he said. I think we've got to take this woman, Lydia, at her word. What's the difference between a social worker and a Rottweiler? I was unable to see the relevance of the question, but he answered it himself. The Rottweiler gives you your baby back. It was a joke, probably in bad taste, but I understood that we were two buddies who had been drinking, and this was the context in which such jokes were told.
God, Don, what is this stuff?
Grenadine. It's non-alcoholic. You require a clear head, and you're getting distracted. Continue.
So, the essence is this. You have to front the social worker, and you have to bring Rosie. You can make an excuse. I could say she was ill due to pregnancy, highly plausible.
Nah, you're only buying time. You might provoke her into submitting the report anyway. You don't want to provoke a Rottweiler.
I thought your point was that social workers and Rottweilers are different.
My point was that they are only slightly different.
Slightly different.
The concept prompted an idea. I could hire an actress to impersonate Rosie.
Sophia Loren?
Isn't she older?
Joking. Seriously, the problem would be that she wouldn't know you well enough.
I figure that's what the social worker is going to be focused on. Can this woman handle Don Tillman? Because you're not...
I finished his sentence for him.
Exactly average. Correct. How long do you think it would take to know me adequately?
Oh, I'd say 6 months, minimum. Sorry, Don, but I think telling Rosie is the lesser of the two evils.
I delegated the problem to my subconscious for a further week. Week 9 of Bud's gestation. The mark on the tile representing his size was now 2.5 centimetres long, and my drawing of his slightly changed shape was more accomplished, due to practice. The actor idea was attractive, and I found it difficult to abandon. In problem-solving parlance, I'd become anchored, unable to see alternatives. But Jean was right. There was no time to brief a stranger on my personality to the extent that she could answer probing questions from a professional. In the end, there was only one person who could help me. I told her the story of the playground incident and the requirement for an assessment.
I tried to make it clear that my priority was to avoid causing stress and that the EPDS questionnaire had indicated that Lydia's fears were unfounded. Nevertheless, I needed to emphasize the risk of not cooperating. We have to show up and be assessed as parents and take her advice, or I'm going to be prosecuted, deported, and banned from contact with Bud. I may have exaggerated slightly, but Jean's image of a Rottweiler was still in my mind. Martial arts training did not cover attack dogs. Bitch, she's got to be way out of line doing this. She's a professional who has detected risk factors. Her requirement seems reasonable. I think you're being kind, just so like you. Anyway, I'm happy to do whatever I can to help. This was an incredibly generous response. I'd been agonizing over whether to proceed with my strategy, but the offer was clear. I need you to impersonate Rosie. I interpreted Sonia's expression as shock. I'd not discussed the plan with Jean, but I was aware of his opinion that accountants were skilled at deception. I was relying on it being accurate. Oh my God, Don, she laughed, but I detected nervousness. You're kidding me, I'm just saying that I know you're not. Oh my God, I don't think I could be Rosie. Morally or in terms of competence? Oh, you know me, totally immoral. This was not my impression of Sonia, but was consistent with Jean's view of her profession. Rosie and I are so different. Correct, but Lydia hasn't met Rosie. She doesn't even know she's Australian, just that she's a medical student with no friends. No friends? What about Dave and me? She only sees you because of me. Most of her interaction is with her study group. Occasionally she sees Judy Esler. She's primarily interested in intellectual conversation. I'll have to catch up on my reading. You want a coffee? We're at Dave and Sonia's apartment. It was a Sunday, but Rosie had gone into university in violation of the weekend free time rule, and Dave was also working. Sonia claimed that her Italian heritage required regular espresso coffee and had a high-quality machine. Coffee was an excellent idea, but not the first priority. After we resolved the impersonation question. After I have my coffee. When Sonia returned with my double espresso and her pregnancy-compatible decaffeinated cappuccino, she appeared to have prepared a speech. All right, Don. It's just one session, no more. I nodded. And no forms to fill in or anything, nothing to sign. I don't think so. Nothing was certain, but as Lydia was officially assessing me as a paedophile, it seemed unlikely that she would report anything about Rosie or the parenthood aspect. Sonia was probably right in characterizing her behavior as way out of line. All right. I'm going to do this for you, for two reasons. The main one is because you've been so great to Dave. I know he'd be insolvent without the cash he gets from George the drummer. I know that. Dave definitely did not know that Sonia knew that. Dave was extremely concerned to ensure that Sonia was unaware of his business problems, which was a ridiculous expectation considering Sonia's profession. Sonia finished her coffee. But I don't want you to tell Dave, she said. Why not? Ah, he's got enough on his mind. You know, Dave, he's a warrior. This was true. The motivation for the deception was to avoid causing stress to Rosie. It would be a terrible outcome if the solution caused stress to Dave, leading to a heart attack or stroke, which he was already susceptible to because of his weight. But secrets were accumulating. I'm extremely poor at deception. I promised Sonia that I would do my best, but that my best was likely to be significantly below the average human ability to lie. I was in need of Gene's skills, but his skills were a result of his personality, which I was not in need of. What's the second reason? I asked. To put that bitch back in her box, said Sonia. She was laughing. Rosie was putting flowers into our two vases and the wine decanter when I arrived home. She was wearing shorts and a sleeveless T-shirt. Her shape was not visibly different from its normal state of perfect. I need a break from study, she said. You were right about things getting out of perspective. Excellent idea, I said. You need to minimize stress. How is Sonia doing? Said Rosie. Sonia is doing extremely well. Dave is nervous about becoming a father, as is normal for men. Rosie laughed. Hey, I've been thinking about what you said last week about us getting some counseling. I was probably a bit defensive. Maybe it'd be a good idea if you feel you need it. No, I was only thinking of you. I'm feeling highly confident, excited. Okay, well, I'm okay too. Let me know if you change your mind. 8 days earlier, I would have accepted Rosie's offer. But now the Sonia approach seemed a better solution.
There would be less stress for Rosie, less risk of the process being derailed by her becoming confrontational, and less danger that she might be exposed to a negative assessment of my readiness for fatherhood. I arranged to meet Sonia at her place of work on the Upper East Side in the hope that I might be able to combine the pre-interview briefing with learning about advances in reproductive technology. But place of work translated into nearby coffee shop. I don't work anywhere near the labs. I only met Dave because I thought his company had overcharged us. Had they? No, Dave screwed up the paperwork, but he was so honest about it, I bought him a coffee. Here. Leading to sex after only 2 dates. Dave told you that? It's incorrect? Completely untrue. We didn't sleep together until we were married. Dave lied? Incredible. Dave was scrupulously honest. Sonia laughed. No, I lied. You couldn't tell? I shook my head. I'm extremely gullible. Fooling Lydia, who was probably accustomed to dealing with welfare cheats, alimony avoiders, and accountants within her own organization, would be more difficult. You definitely didn't tell her that Rosie was Australian. I said that she didn't have any family here. You can be from any location except New York. All right. Take me through this depression test. She may use some others. I've researched several. The common factor appears to be that risk of depression is detected via the respondent feeling unhappy and anxious. Isn't psychology amazing? I wonder what these people get paid for sometimes. Do you think we'll be able to deceive her? Don't worry, Dawn. The trick is only lie about the things you have to lie about. You be you, I'll be me, except for the name. I'm happy and completely normal. I almost failed to recognize Sonia in the enormous foyer of the Bellevue Hospital. I'd only ever seen her in a work costume, and on social occasions, in jeans. She was wearing a large patterned skirt and a white frilled shirt, creating an overall impression of a folk dancer. She greeted me effusively. Ciao, Dawn, it's a beautiful day, no? You're sounding strange, like a comedian pretending to be Italian. I am Italian. I am only living here 1 year. I got no family here. Like you say to the lady, but I'm very happy because of the bambino. She rotated on the spot and the centrifugal force caused her skirt to extend. She laughed. Sonia's grandparents on her father's side were Italian, but she did not speak Italian. If Lydia brought in an interpreter, we would be in trouble. I recommended Sonia keep the use of the accent subtle, but it was a brilliant idea to create a foreign Rosie without imitating an Australian accent, which would appear inauthentic next to mine. I'm sorry to take you away from your studies, said Lydia, after indicating that we should sit down. You must be very busy. I'm very busy all the time, said Sonia. She looked at her watch. I was impressed by the acting. How long have you been in the States? Since the start of the medical course. I come here for study. And before that, what were you doing? Working in an IVF facility in Milano. It is from this that I become interested in medicine. How did you and Don meet? Disaster. Sonia looked at me. I looked at Sonia. If one of us had to invent a story, it was best that it be Sonia. At Columbia. Don is my teacher. Everything is happening rapido. When are you due? December. This was the correct answer for Sonia. Did you plan to get pregnant so quickly? When you work in IVF, you learn how precious it is to have a baby. I think I'm so lucky. Sonia had forgotten the accent, but she sounded highly credible. And you're planning to defer your studies when you have this baby? This was a tricky question. Sonia, the real Sonia, planned to take a year off work, which was causing Dave stress due to the impact on income. If Sonia answered as herself rather than as Rosie, I would be forced to act as Dave for consistency and would doubtless fail to be convincing. It was better that Sonia gave the answer that Rosie would give, except that she did not know it. I answered for her. Rosie intends to continue her studies uninterrupted. No break? A minimum of a week, possibly more. Lydia looked at Sonia. A week? You're only taking a week off to have a baby? Lydia's obvious surprise and disapproval was consistent with David Borenstein's advice. Sonia's surprise was consistent with her not being Rosie and her own plans to take indefinite leave. We were all in agreement, except Rosie, who was not in the room. I tried to present her position. The birth of a baby is no more disruptive than a minor upper respiratory tract infection. You think having a baby is like having a cold. Without the disease aspect. Rosie's analogy had been faulty in that respect. More equivalent to taking a week's leave to attend the baseball playoffs. Sonia gave me a strange look. My baseball reference had doubtless been prompted by subconscious thoughts of Dave. Lydia changed the topic. So, with Rosie studying full-time, you're the sole breadwinner. Rosie would hate me answering yes to this question. My answer was true until recently. Incorrect. She works in a bar in the evenings. I guess she'll be giving that up at some point. Absolutely not. She considers it critical to contribute to the finances. As Sonia had said, most of the time it was possible to tell the truth. And what do you see as your role? In what respect? I'm thinking with Rosie studying full-time and working part-time, you might need to help with the baby. We've discussed it. Rosie requires zero assistance. Lydia turned to Sonia. Are you comfortable with all that? Is that what you think? I had temporarily forgotten that Sonia was a virtual Rosie and had been speaking of Rosie as a person external to our conversation. I hope Lydia had not noticed, but the answer was a simple yes. Lydia would have a consistent story, consistent with mine, consistent with Rosie having exactly what she required for happiness, consistent with reality. Well, before you answer, said Lydia, tell me a bit about your family. Was your mother allowed to speak for herself? Not really. My father decided what she said and did. So were they very traditional? If you mean did my father go to work and come home and never cook and expect dinner on the table while my mom, who had diabetes, had to manage five kids, yes, we were traditional. Tradition was the excuse. The Italian accent had gone. Sonia was sounding angry. Seems like you might be about to follow in her footsteps. Seems like it, doesn't it? It was all about my father's job. Oh, he had to work so hard, so hard. Well, you know what? I didn't marry my father. I'm expecting just a little bit more from Dave. Dave? Don! There was a pause. Lydia was probably working backwards from Sonia's error to arrive at the inevitable conclusion that she was an imposter. I needed an explanation for the name error. My mind was racing, and the solution was so elegant that it overrode my natural aversion to lying. My middle name is David. My father's name's also Donald, so sometimes I'm called Dave, to avoid confusion. The idea was prompted by my cousin Barry and his father, who was also named Barry, leading to my cousin being known within the family by his middle name, which is Victor. Well, Don, Dave, what do you think of what Rosie just said? Rosie? Now I was seriously confused. Sonia, Rosie, Don, Dave, Barry, Victor, which is also my grandfather's name, my father's father. I was about to be a father, too, of a child with a temporary name. Yes, Donald, Dave, Rosie, your wife. With time, I could have untangled it, but with Lydia staring at me, I gave the only practicable answer. I need to process the new information. When you've processed it, book another appointment. Lydia waved the police file. We were dismissed, and the problem was not solved. Sonia had to return to work, so we debriefed on the subway. I have to tell Rosie, I said. What are you going to say to Lydia? Hello, this is the real Rosie. I'm a con man as well as a pedophile and an insensitive slob. There was no mention of insensitivity and slobbishness. If you're a bit more sensitive, you might have picked it up. It was Sonia's stop, but I got off too. The conversation was obviously critical, in two senses of the word. Sorry, I'm angry with myself, said Sonia. I messed it up. I don't like to mess up. The accidental use of Dave's name was totally understandable. I had to concentrate hard to avoid calling you Sonia. Oh, it's a bigger deal than that. Things aren't going the way I'd hoped with Dave and me. We tried for so long, and now he's not interested. I knew why. Dave was stressed by work and the possibility of business failure, leading to the prospect of Sonia having to work in violation of her plans, leading to rejection of Dave as a suitable partner, leading to divorce, estrangement from his child, and all meaning disappearing from his life. We'd reviewed this sequence many times. Unfortunately, I could not share the state of the business with Sonia, as this might accelerate the process. Now Sonia was identifying another path that might lead to the same conclusion. Sonia continued, I've been reading up on everything, trying to do everything right. And he seems to think the pregnancy has nothing to do with him. Do you know what he did last night? Ate dinner and went to bed? It seemed the most likely scenario. You couldn't have put it better. I'd made a meal right out of the pregnancy book covering 7 of the 10 power foods. I had it waiting for him when he came in, and you know what he'd done? He bought a hamburger. A double cheeseburger with bacon and guacamole. He's supposed to be on a diet.
Did it have tomato and leafy greens?
What?
I'm counting the pregnancy power foods. He sat and ate it in front of me and then went to bed, just so inconsiderate.
I thought it best not to reply. Dave trying to save his marriage, leading to working harder, leading to stress, leading to hamburger consumption and exhaustion, leading to health and marriage problems. More material to process.
Neither of us spoke as we walked from the subway to the IVF facility. Sonia inexplicably went to hug me but remembered in time.
Don't say anything to Dave. We'll get through it.
Can I tell him that part about getting through it? He may also be worried about marriage failure.
He said that?
Correct.
Oh, God, it's all so hard.
Agreed. Human behavior is highly confusing. I'll tell Rosie about Lydia tonight.
No, you won't. It's my fault, and I don't want to be responsible for upsetting Rosie. Sounds like she's already carrying the weight of the world. We'll get it right next time.
I'm not sure what we have to do.
Lydia and I are saying the same thing. You need to think more about supporting Rosie. No matter what she's saying about being independent, she needs your help.
Why would she lie?
She's not lying, not deliberately. She's got this idea of herself as Wonder Woman. Or maybe she thinks you don't want to help, or can't help.
So I need to demonstrate a contribution to the pregnancy process.
Support, taking an interest, being there. That's all Lydia and I are looking for. And Don,
you have a question?
How many power foods in the hamburger? There was lettuce and tomato on both of them.
8, but no buts. This time she did hug me. I kept still, and it was over quite quickly.
Chapter 14. Lydia was right. 6 weeks had passed since Rosie's announcement of the pregnancy. Yet, despite setting up the tile schedule to support the baby project, I'd actually done almost zero to prepare for baby production and maintenance, other than the purchase of ingredients for one pregnancy-compatible meal and the research excursion that led to the playground incident. Jean was wrong. Instincts that worked in the ancestral environment were not sufficient in a world that regulated playground visits and allowed choices between tofu and pizza. He was right, however, in recommending that I address the problem in my own way, working from my own strengths. But I needed to begin now, not wait until after the baby was born. My search for appropriate texts on the practical issues of pregnancy produced a substantial list. I decided to begin with a well-regarded book as a broad guide to the field and then refer to the specific papers that it referenced for more detailed information. The sales assistant at the medical school bookshop recommended the 4th edition of What to Expect When You're Expecting by Murkoff and Maisel, with the warning that some readers found it too technical. Perfect. It was reassuringly thick. A quick examination of What to Expect identified some positive and negative attributes. The coverage of topics was impressive, although much was irrelevant to Rosie and me. We did not own a cat that might cause infection via its feces. We were not habitual users of cocaine. Rosie did not have any fears about her competence as a mother. The referencing was poor, a fault doubtless caused by it being intended for a non-academic audience. I was constantly looking for the evidence. The first chapter I read was 9 months of eating well. It provided the meta-study I was looking for, drawing together the best research on diet and pregnancy and using it as the basis for practical recommendations. At least that appeared to be the intent. The chapter title was yet another reminder that Rosie and the developing fetus, exposed and vulnerable to toxins crossing the placental wall, had experienced 9 weeks of not eating well, including 3 weeks of not drinking well, due to the lack of planning. But alcohol already ingested could not be uningested. I needed to focus on the things that I could change and accept the things I could not. The advocacy for organic and local produce was predictable. This was a subject that I'd previously researched for obvious economic and health reasons. Any advice on pregnancy based on the premise that natural is better should be accompanied by statistics on birth outcomes in the natural environment, devoid of nutritional diversity, antibiotics, and sterile operating theatres. And of course, a rigorous definition of natural. The disparity between my well-researched conclusions about organics and the summary in the book was a useful warning not to accept recommendations without checking primary sources. Meanwhile, I had no choice but to rely on What to Expect as the best information available. I skimmed the rest of the book, learning some interesting facts, before devoting the remainder of the afternoon to developing a standardized meal system pregnancy version in line with its recommendations. Rosie's rejection of meat and unsustainable seafood made the job simpler by reducing the number of options. I was confident that the resulting menu would provide an adequate nutritional base. As so often occurs in science, implementation proved more difficult than planning. Rosie's initially negative reaction to the tofu meal should have been a warning. I had to remind myself that my acquisition of more comprehensive knowledge had not of itself changed Rosie's view. Logical but non-intuitive. Rosie raised the subject without prompting from me. "Where did you get the smoked mackerel from?" she asked. "Irrelevant," I said. "It was cold smoked."
"So?"
"Cold smoked fish is banned."
"Why?"
"It could make you sick." I was conscious of the vagueness of my answer. I'd not had time to research the evidence behind the unreferenced claim, but at this point I had to accept it as the best advice available.
"Lots of things can make you sick. I'm sick every morning at the moment, and I feel like some more of that smoked mackerel. It's probably my body sending me a signal that I need smoked mackerel. Cold smoked mackerel."
"I recommend a tinned salmon and soybean-based mini meal. The good news is that you can eat it immediately to satisfy your craving." I walked to the refrigerator and fetched part one of Rosie's dinner.
"Mini meal? What's a mini meal?"
It was fortunate that I was studying pregnancy. Rosie had clearly done minimal research. "A partial solution to the nausea problem. You should eat 6 mini meals per day. I've organized a second meal for you at 9 p.m.
"What about you? Are you eating at 9 o'clock?
"Of course not. I'm not pregnant."
"What about my other 4 meals?"
"Prepackaged. Breakfast and 3 daytime meals for tomorrow are already in the refrigerator."
"Shit, I mean, that's really nice, but I don't want you going to so much trouble. I can just grab something from the cafe at uni. Some of their stuff's okay."
This was in direct contradiction to previous complaints about the cafe. "You should resist the temptation. In the interests of maternal and bud health, we need to plan some more." I was quoting the book. In this instance, the advice offered by What to Expect was in line with my own thinking. Also, you need to control your coffee consumption. Cafe measures are inconsistent, hence I recommend drinking 1 standardized coffee in the morning at home and drinking only decaffeinated at university.
"You've been reading up, haven't you?"
"Correct. I recommend What to Expect when you're expecting. It's intended for pregnant women." A conversation was interrupted by the arrival of Gene, who now had his own key. He seemed in a good mood.
"Evening all. What's for dinner?"
He waved a bottle of red wine. "Appetizer is New England oysters. Entree is deli meats. Main course is rare New York steaks with spice crust and alfalfa salad, followed by a selection of raw milk and blue cheeses, then affogato with Strega. As part of the change to the meal system, I'd also designed meals suitable for Gene and myself, taking into account that we were neither pregnant nor sustainable pescatarians. As Rosie was looking a little confused, I added, "Rosie will be eating a legume-based curry, minus the spices." The book warned of irrational behavior due to hormonal changes. Rosie refused to eat her mini-meal and instead consumed a sample of every component of Gene's and my dinner, including a small quantity of steak, in violation of her commitment to sustainable seafood pescatarianism, and even a sip of wine. The predictable consequence was illness the next morning. She was sitting on the bed, head in her hands, when I alerted her to the time.
"You go by yourself," she said. "I'm going to take the morning off."
Feeling unwell is normal in pregnancy. It's almost certainly a good sign. Lack of morning sickness is correlated with a higher risk of miscarriages and abnormalities. Your body is probably assembling some critical component, such as an arm, and is minimizing the possibility of toxins disrupting the process.
"You're talking shit."
Flaxman and Sherman, Quarterly Review of Biology, Summer 2000, An Evolved Mechanism to Reduce Toxin-Induced Deformities.
"Don, I appreciate all this, but it's got to stop. I just want to eat normal food. I want to eat what I feel like. I'm feeling crap. And tinned salmon and soybeans is going to make me feel more crap. It's my body, and I get to choose what I do with it."
Incorrect. two bodies, one of which has 50% of my genes. So I get 1.5 votes and you get 0.5 a vote. I win. I get to eat smoked mackerel and raw oysters. She must have noticed my expression. I'm kidding, Don, but I don't want you telling me what to eat. I can do this myself. I'm not going to get drunk or eat salami. You ate pastrami last night. Hardly any. I was making a point anyway. I'm not planning to eat meat again. What about shellfish? I was testing. I'm guessing no go. You guess wrong. Cooked shellfish is acceptable. Seriously, how important is all this stuff? I mean, this is so you. Getting obsessed with every little thing. Judy Esler said she never worried about what she ate 25 years ago. I'm guessing I'm more likely to be run over walking to Columbia than poisoned by oysters. I predict you're incorrect. Predict? You're not sure, are you? Rosie knew me too well. The book was short on hard data. Rosie stood up and retrieved her towel from the floor. Make me a list of what I can't eat. No more than 10 things and no big generic categories like sweet stuff or salty stuff. You cook dinner, I'll eat what I like during the day, except for your list and no mini meals. I remembered an item of extraordinarily unscientific advice from the book, encouraging the most serious failing of the medical profession. It was in reference to caffeine. Different practitioners have different recommendations, so check in with yours. Incredible. Placing individual judgment ahead of the consensus from research. But it provided me with an opportunity to ask another question. What advice has your medical practitioner provided on diet? Oh, I haven't had a chance to make an appointment. I've been frantic with the thesis. I'll do it soon. I was stunned. I did not need the book to tell me that a pregnant woman should schedule regular visits to an obstetrician. Despite my reservations about the competence of some members of the medical profession, there was no doubt that statistically, involvement of a professional led to better outcomes. My sister had died due to medical misdiagnosis, but she would certainly have died if she had not seen a doctor at all. You're overdue for the 8-week ultrasound. I'll ask Dr. Borenstein for a recommendation and make an appointment for you. Leave it. I'll sort it out on Monday. I'm meeting Judy for lunch. David is far more knowledgeable. Judy knows everyone. Please just leave it to me. You guarantee you'll make an appointment on Monday. Or Tuesday. It might be Tuesday. I'm seeing Judy. She changed, but we might have changed. I can't remember. You're too disorganized to have a baby. And you're too obsessional. Lucky I'm the one who's having it. What had happened to we're pregnant? Chapter 15. I'll let you guys have a romantic dinner alone, said Gene when I went to his office after completing my scheduled work the following Tuesday. I've got a date. I had been expecting him to travel home with me on the subway to provide intellectual stimulation. Now I would have to download a paper to read. More seriously, Inga had left early to prepare for dinner at an upscale restaurant. I detected a pattern. You're having dinner with Inga. Very perceptive. She's delightful company. I've scheduled dinner for you at our apartment. I'm sure Rosie won't miss me. Inga is extremely young. Inappropriately young. She's over 21. She can drink and vote and associate with unattached men. You're in danger of being ageist, Don. You should be thinking about Claudia. Fixing the problem of your promiscuity. I'm not promiscuous. I'm only seeing one woman. Gene smiled. Worry about your own problems. Gene was right. Rosie was pleased with his absence. When we got married, I had assumed I would have to spend uncomfortable amounts of time in the presence of another person. In fact, much of our time was spent apart due to work and study and our time together, excluding periods in bed when at least one of us, usually me, was asleep, was now frequently shared with Gene. Dedicated contact with Rosie had now fallen well below the optimum level. There was one encouraging item in the book, which I had chosen not to raise in the presence of Gene. Have you noticed an increase in libido? I asked. Have you? An increase in sexual appetite is not uncommon in the first trimester. I was wondering whether you were affected. You're hilarious. I guess if I wasn't throwing up or feeling like shit, it struck me that our practice of having sex in the mornings rather than the evenings was contributing to the problem. After dinner, Rosie headed for her study to work on her thesis. On average, she was devoting 95 minutes to this pre-bed session, although the variance was high. After 80 minutes, I made her a cup of fruit infusion, which I accompanied with some fresh blueberries. How are you feeling? I asked. Not so bad, except for the stats.
There's a lot of ugly things in the world. I wish I could keep them all away from you, I said, Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch in supportive mode.
It was probably my most effective line. Opportunities to impersonate Gregory Peck had been significantly reduced by Jean's presence. Rosie stood up.
Good timing. I think I've had enough of ugly things for tonight.
She put her arms around me and kissed me in passionate mode rather than greetings mode. We were interrupted by a familiar noise from an unfamiliar location. Someone was calling Jean on Skype. I was not sure of the rules for answering another person's VOIP communication, but perhaps it was Claudia with an emergency, or a proposal for reconciliation. I entered Jean's bedroom and saw Eugenie's face on the screen. Jean and Claudia's daughter is 9 years old. I'd not spoken to her since we moved to New York. I clicked on Answer with Video.
Dad! Eugenie's voice was clear and loud.
Greetings, it's Don.
Eugenie laughed.
I can tell from your face. I could have told from you saying greetings.
Your father is out. What are you doing at his house?
It's my apartment. We're sharing, like students.
That's so cool. Were you and my dad friends at school?
No. Jean is 16 years older than I am and would not have belonged to my social group if we'd been contemporaries. Jean would have been dating girls, playing sport, and soliciting votes for school captain.
Hey, Don.
Hey, Eugenie.
When do you think Dad'll come home?
His sabbatical is 6 months, hence technically December 24, but the semester ends on December 20.
It's a long time.
4 months and 14 days.
Hey, move your head, Don.
I looked at the small image of my face in the corner of the monitor and realized that Rosie had walked into the room behind me. I moved to one side and expanded the image. Rosie was wearing her one item of impractical nightwear. It was her equivalent of a blueberry muffin, although it was black rather than white with blue spots. She did a little dance and Eugenie called out to her.
Hey, Rosie, hi!
Can she see me? Said Rosie.
Yep, said Eugenie.
You're wearing a...
I believe you, said Rosie, laughing and left the room, waving to me from the doorway. Eugenie resumed our conversation, but I was now distracted.
Does Dad want to come home?
Of course. He misses everyone.
Even Mum? Does he say that?
Of course. I should go to bed. It's late here.
Mum says he needs to sort some things out. Is he?
He's making excellent progress. We have a men's group, as recommended in my book on pregnancy, consisting of a refrigeration engineer, your father, a rock star, and me. I'll give you a progress report in a few days.
You're so funny. You haven't really got a rock star. Hey, why are you reading a book on pregnancy?
To assist Rosie with production of our baby.
You're having a baby? Mum didn't tell me.
Probably because she doesn't know.
It's a secret?
No, but I saw no use in giving her the information. She's not required to take any action.
Mum! Mum! Don and Rosie are having a baby!
Claudia pushed Eugenie out of the way, which seemed rude, and it was now obvious that the conversation would continue. I wanted to talk to Claudia, but not now and not with Eugenie present.
Don, that's wonderful news. How do you feel?
Excited. End of story, I said, combining Jean's recommended answer with the conversation terminator I'd learned from Rosie. Claudia ignored my signal.
That's wonderful, she repeated. Where's Rosie?
In bed. Possibly not sleeping due to my absence. It's extremely late.
Oh, sorry. Well, please, pass on my congratulations. When's she due?
After conducting an interrogation on pregnancy-related topics, Claudia said,
So, Jean's out, is he?
He'd promised to talk to Eugenie. Where is he?
I don't know. I clicked the video off.
I've lost your face, Don.
Some technical issue.
Oh, I see. Or I don't see. Well,
doing whatever he's doing isn't going to solve Eugenie's science problem.
I'm an expert at science problems.
And also a decent person.
Are you sure you've got time?
When does it need to be completed?
Well, she was very anxious to get it done tonight, but if you have other things...
It will take less time to answer a primary school science question than to negotiate an alternative arrangement with Claudia. Proceed. Eugenie returned and I restored the video. Eugenie turned it off again. What's the science problem? I asked. There's no science problem. I just told Mum that, like I had a science problem. Facepalm. Facepalm? Like, duh, I'm top of the class in science and maths. Can you do calculus? Not yet. So you're probably not a genius. Excellent. Why excellent? I thought it was good to be smart. I recommend being smart, but not a genius, unless the only thing you care about is numbers. Professional mathematicians are usually socially inept. Maybe that's why everyone is saying mean things about me on Facebook. Everyone. She laughed. No, just lots of kids. Can you construct some sort of filter? I can block them. I kind of don't want to. I want to see what they say. They're still kind of my friends. I'm sounding stupid, right? No, it's normal to want information. It's normal to want to be liked. Is there any threat of violence? Nah, they just say stupid things. Probably a result of being stupid. Highly intelligent people are often bullied as a result of being different. That difference being high intelligence. I was conscious of not sounding highly intelligent. Did you get bullied? I bet you did. You would win the bet. Initially violently until I learned martial arts, then more subtly. Fortunately, I'm not a subtle person, so once the violence stopped, things were much better. We talked for 58 minutes, including the initial conversation and the Claudia interaction, exchanging information about bullying experiences. I could not see any obvious solution to her problem, but if her distress was at the level I had experienced as a child, I was obliged to offer any knowledge that might assist. In the end, she said, I have to go horse riding. You're the smartest person I know. In terms of intelligence quotient, she was probably right. In terms of knowledge of practical psychology, she was wrong. I would not rely on my advice. You didn't give me any. I just like talking to you. Can we do this again? Of course. I had also enjoyed this conversation. Except for thinking about the alternative activity in the adjacent room. I terminated the connection. As I was leaving Jean's room, the computer beeped with a text message. Good night. I heart you. Don. Rosie was barely awake when I joined her in bed.
Sounds like you had a nice chat, she said.
To begin with, this case should never have come to trial, I said. Atticus Finch, defending the innocent Tom Robinson, scapegoated because of a minor genetic difference. Rosie smiled.
Sorry, Mr. Peck, I'm stuffed. Good night.
Although I had described the group of males with whom I had recently watched baseball and eaten hamburgers as a men's group, my suggestion that we formalize it was not well received by George.
I'm already in one, he said. It's ruined my life.
Obviously, you should leave it. Join a more suitable one.
Ah, but it made my life too, I owe it.
I realized he was talking about the dead Kings. You don't want to watch the ball game with us and converse on non-baseball topics between innings?
Oh, that's fine by me. Just no beating drums. I get enough of that at work. A Casanova and the big guy coming.
I mentally mapped the two descriptions to Jean and Dave and answered after only a brief pause. Correct.
I'll get my drinking shoes on.
Chapter 16. Calculon wants to connect with you on Skype. I didn't know anyone called Calculon. One of the advantages of having a small number of friends is that communications are easily filtered. I ignored the request. The next evening, I had an actual message from Calculon. It's me, Eugenie. I accepted the invitation, and within seconds, my computer was ringing. Greetings, Eugenie. Her image came into view.
Oh, gross.
I recognized the problem from previous conversations with Simon Lefevre, my Melbourne research colleague. This is my office. It has its own toilet. I'm not currently using it except as a seat.
Weird. I'm definitely going to tell Mum. Except I'm not supposed to be talking to you.
Why not?
I did what you said. I made it into a joke.
What did you make into a joke? This girl was saying my dad had like 100 girlfriends, so I said that's because he's so cool, and your dad is so not cool he could only school your mother, who's a troll. Like someone who guards a bridge. Eugenie laughed.
No, it's someone who's annoying on social media. Dad said she was one. Anyhow, everyone started laughing at this girl instead of me, and then another girl dobbed us all in, and we've all got a week's detention, and Mum got a note, so, well, now we're all picking on her.
On your mother? No, the girl who reported us. Maybe you should have scheduled a roster of whose turn it is to be bullied. It would avoid unfairness.
I don't think so.
But the problem is solved.
We have another problem. She looked very serious.
Carl. He's also being bullied?
No, he says if Dad ever comes back, he's going to kill him because of the girlfriends.
Eugenie's voice indicated emotion. I detected a risk of crying.
And I really want Dad to come back.
Prediction correct. Eugenie was now crying.
It won't be possible to solve the problem while you're emotionally incapacitated, I said.
Can you talk to Carl? He won't talk to Dad.
Carl's stepmother is a clinical psychologist. His father is head of the Department of Psychology at a major university. Now I, a physical scientist hardwired to understand logic and ideas ahead of interpersonal dynamics, had been selected to counsel their son. I needed help. Fortunately, it was readily available in the person of Rosie.
Gene's son wants to kill him, I said.
He'll have to wait in line. I can't believe it. He's out with Inga again, isn't he?
Correct. I've attempted to warn her. What do I say to Carl?
Nothing. You can't take responsibility for everyone's life. The person who needs to talk to Carl is Gene. He's Carl's father and your housemate. For the last 6 weeks, which we need to talk about.
There's a vast list of things we need to talk about.
I know, but not now, okay? I'll lose my train of thought. 2 hours later, I knocked on her door and entered. There was a screwed-up printer paper on the floor. Screwing it up made it impossible to reuse and more bulky for disposal. I diagnosed frustration on Rosie's part as well.
Do you require assistance?
No, I can do it. It's just so fucking annoying. I talked to Stefan on Skype and it all made sense and now it doesn't. I don't know how I'm going to get it done in the next 3 weeks.
Does that have serious implications?
You know I'm supposed to get it finished over the vacation, which I might have been able to do if I didn't have a baby brain or have to worry about Gene's problems and my medical appointments, which I made, by the way. The ultrasound is next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Is that okay with you?
It's almost 2 weeks overdue.
My doctor said 12 weeks was fine.
12 weeks and 3 days. The book specifies 8 to 11 weeks. A published consensus is more reliable than the opinion of one practitioner.
Whatever. I've got an OBGYN now. I saw her today and she's really good. We'll do all the rest by the rules.
According to best practice. The second ultrasound is due at 18 to 22 weeks. I recommend 22 since the first one was late.
I'll book it in at 22 weeks. No days and 0 hours. It's called a sonogram here, by the way. But right now, I just want to get this analysis done before I go to bed. And I want a glass of wine. Just one.
Alcohol is banned. You're still in the first trimester.
If you don't pour me a glass of wine, I'm going to have a cigarette.
Short of physical restraint or violence, there was nothing I could do to stop Rosie drinking. I brought a glass of white wine to her study and sat in one of the spare chairs.
Not having one yourself, she said.
No. Rosie took a sip.
Don, have you watered this down?
It's a low-alcohol wine.
It certainly is now.
I watched as she took a second sip, imagining the alcohol crossing the placental wall, damaging brain cells, reducing our unborn child from a future Einstein to a physicist who would fall just short of taking science to a new level. A child who would never have the experience described by Richard Feynman of knowing something about the universe that no one ever had before. Or, given the medical heritage on Rosie's side, perhaps he or she would stand on the brink of a cure for cancer. But a few brain cells, destroyed by a mother driven to irrationality by pregnancy-induced hormones, Rosie was looking at me.
You've made your point. Go and squeeze me an orange before I change my mind, and then you can show me how to do this fucking analysis.
Gene was in my office at the university when Inga brought in a small FedEx package. This was at reception for Don, from Australia, she said. While Gene and Inga made lunch plans, I deciphered the sender's details, written in untidy script. Phil Jarman, retired Australian rules footballer, a current proprietor of a gymnasium, and Rosie's father. Why had he sent a package to Colombia?
I presume it's for Rosie, I said to Jean when Inga had gone.
Is it addressed to Rosie? Said Jean.
No, it's addressed to me.
Then open it.
It was a tiny box. containing a diamond ring. The diamond was quite small, smaller than the one on the engagement ring I'd given Rosie. "You expecting this?" said Jean. "No." "Well, then there'll be a letter." Jean was correct. There was a folded piece of paper in the package. "Dear Don, I've enclosed a ring. It was Rosie's mother's and she would have wanted her to have it. It's traditional to give an eternity ring on your first wedding anniversary, and I'd be honored if you'd accept it as a gift from me and Rosie's mother to give it to her. Rosie's not the easiest person in the world, and I've always been concerned that the man she married might not be up to the job. You seem to be doing all right so far from what she tells me. Tell her I miss her, and don't ever take what you have for granted. Phil, your father-in-law. P.S. I've got that Aikido move of yours worked out. If you screw up, I will personally come to New York and beat the living shit out of you." I gave the letter to Jean. He read it, then folded it up again. "Just give me a minute," he said. I detected emotion. "It seems Phil is unimpressed with me," I said. Jean stood up and paced around the room. It is a habit we share when thinking about difficult problems. My father would quote Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau, American philosopher, Don, he would say, as I walked around our living room working on a mathematics or chess problem. "Never trust any thought arrived at sitting down." Jean closed the door. "Don, I want you to do an exercise for me. I want you to imagine that your baby's born and it's a girl and she grows up to be 10 years old. And one day, Rosie crashes your car and you're in the passenger seat because you've been drinking. And, you know how the story goes and I know because you told me, but the evolutionary imperative cuts in and you save your daughter instead of Rosie. And you're left with just the two of you." Jean had to stop due to emotion. I helped him out. "I'm familiar with the story, obviously. It was the story of Phil, Rosie's mother, and Rosie, with a substitution of names." "No, you're not. You've only heard it as something that happened to someone else. The same as if you read it in the paper about a family in Kansas. I want you to imagine yourself in it. Be Phil. And then imagine your daughter marrying some guy who broke your nose and isn't exactly average and going away to New York and getting pregnant. Then imagine yourself writing that letter." "Too much imagining, too many overlaps. Rosie's in both stories in different roles." Jean looked at me with an expression I'd never seen him use. This was possibly because he had never been angry with me before. "Too much imagining. How long did it take you to get a black belt? How long to learn to bone a fucking quail? I am telling you, Don, that you will sit down and work this through no matter how long it takes until you are Phil fucking Jarman, walking around that car with a smashed pelvis to get his kid out, and then you will write that letter yourself and then try to come to me and say, 'Phil is unimpressed with me.'" I waited a few minutes for Jean to calm down. "Why?" "Because you're about to be a father, and every father is Phil Jarman." Jean sat down. "Go and get us both a coffee, and then I want to talk to you about the anniversary, which you've planned nothing for, right?" Chapter 17. Rosie's exercise habits were random in the extreme, in violation of the book. Medical classes were due to resume in 2 weeks, and now seemed like the ideal time to address the problem. My plan was to insert a workout an hour before she would otherwise have departed for university. She could then travel directly from the exercise venue. As a result of our recently improved proximity to Columbia, the net impact on waking time would be only 46 minutes. It all seemed straightforward, but new initiatives required piloting. I woke Rosie 46 minutes before her usual time. Her reaction was predictable.
"What time is it? It's dark. What's wrong?"
6:44 a.m. It's only dark because the curtains are closed. The sun rose approximately 40 minutes ago, and there would have been pre-dawn light prior to that. Nothing is wrong. We're going to the pool.
What pool?
The indoor swimming pool at the Chelsea Recreation Center on West 25th. You'll require your bathing costume.
I don't have a bathing costume. I hate swimming.
You're Australian. All Australians swim. Almost all.
I'm one of the exceptions. Go by yourself and bring me back a muffin, or the legal equivalent. I'm feeling a bit better for this time of the morning.
I pointed out that Rosie had limited experience of this time of the morning, and that she was the person requiring the exercise, and that swimming was a recommended form of exercise for pregnant women.
Swimming is the recommended form of exercise for everything.
Correct.
So why don't you do it?
She said. I don't like the crowds in the pool. I strongly dislike getting water in my eyes and putting my head under.
So there you go, said Rosie. You can empathize. I won't make you swim if you don't make me. In fact, maybe there's a general rule there.
I began the Phil empathy exercise as I jogged to Columbia, imagining myself in his shoes, a practice also recommended by Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird. It was a terrible scenario, but I could not achieve what Jean wanted. I was reaching the conclusion that the exercise would require months, and possibly the intervention of a hypnotist or bartender when my subconscious took over. I woke that night from the world's worst nightmare. I was in command of a spaceship, typing instructions at the console. Rosie was in the scout capsule, drifting away from the mothership, and I couldn't bring her back. The keyboard was touch-sensitive, and my fingers kept making mistakes. My frustration turned to anger, and I was unable to function. I woke up, breathing rapidly, and reached out. Rosie was still there. I wondered if Phil had similar nightmares, and woke to find that the world was exactly as he had dreamt it. Our first wedding anniversary was on 11th of August. This year it was a Sunday. Jean's instructions were to make a booking at a high-quality restaurant, purchase flowers, and acquire a gift made from a material determined by the ordinal year of the anniversary. You're suggesting I purchase some object every year for the duration of the marriage? The two may be related, said Jean. Did you do this for Claudia? You have the opportunity to learn from my mistakes. Rosie agrees that we don't require vast quantities of junk. Claudia said the same thing. I suggest you ignore it and buy something made from paper. Can it be consumable, disposable? As long as it's paper and demonstrates thoughtfulness. You may want to run it past me first. You will run it past me first. I began to make plans in accordance with Jean's instructions, but they were derailed by an envelope that I found on my bathroom office floor on the Saturday morning, the day before the anniversary. I had the door closed as I was working on the bud sketch for week 12. Jean or Rosie must have slipped it under the door rather than risk interrupting some bodily function. There were advantages in combining bathroom and office. It was an invitation, identifiable by the word invitation on the front. Inside was a small, thin notebook with a red cover. On the first page, Rosie had written, Don, I want to give you the maximum surprise without exceeding your tolerance. Turn the pages until you're happy. The fewer the better. Love, Rosie. It seemed that the Jarman family had decided to communicate with me via handwritten letters. I turned the page. Our wedding anniversary is tomorrow. I'm in charge. I had already booked a restaurant, which I would now need to cancel. Already I was being surprised and disrupted by an initiative that was intended to buffer me from the effects. I was about to turn to the next page when Jean knocked on the door. You okay, Don? I opened the door and explained the situation. As a man of integrity, you can't read the whole thing, then pretend you haven't, said Jean. My intention is to minimize stress and then tell Rosie. Wrong. Accept the challenge. She's not going to do anything to hurt you. She just wants to surprise you, which she'll enjoy doing. You'll enjoy it too if you loosen up a bit. Jean snatched the book from me. No choice now. I cancelled the restaurant and began to prepare my mind for the unexpected. The unexpected began at 3:32 p.m. on Sunday. The doorbell rang. It was Isaac and Judy Esler, neither of whom I had seen since the bluefin tuna incident. They were on their way to view the Search for the Unicorn exhibition at the Metropolitan Museum of Art and wondered if I'd like to join them.
Go, said Rosie. I see Judy every week. I can use the time to work on my thesis.
We took the subway to the exhibition, which was moderately interesting, but it became clear that the primary purpose of the excursion was to verify that our friendship was still operational following the bluefin tuna incident. Judy did almost all of the talking.
I couldn't believe Lydia. She hasn't shown up at a book club since, and we've had three meetings. I'm so sorry, Don.
No apologies required, I said. You did nothing wrong, and I was guilty of insensitivity regarding food preferences. Rosie would also object if I ordered bluefin tuna. It seemed sensible not to reveal that I'd been seeing Lydia for professional assessment. In any case, another matter was more critical. Did you inform Rosie of Lydia's assessment of me? I asked. I told her what Lydia said and that Isaac put her in her place. It was Seymour, said Isaac. I'm sure it was you. It doesn't matter. Lydia has her own issues. I thought she and Seymour would be a good pair. He's not happy unless he's got someone who needs him, and she'd have her own private therapist. I'm not telling you both anything when I say she could use one. Judy had not